think we can probably get going. So good morning. Welcome to the technical deep dive session into LinQ Skype Video Federation. My name is Carl Olivier. I'm a principal peer manager for Microsoft in the Skype program area. I look after call signaling for our consumer business.
William Looney, I'm a senior lead program manager responsible for media service infrastructure, focusing on multipoint and interop infrastructure for media services.
Okay, so just to set the stage, the session this morning is really going to be looking at how Federation works, what we are adding in addition to what's already available in live and publicly today, which is the Audio Federation. And what we're building and what we're going to be releasing later this year, and exactly what that adds, and we'll deep dive into how that works. We will do Q&A later, so feel free to save your questions, write them down. Okay, first thing that I'd like to just talk about is what are the scenarios? Phase one scenarios, and if you'll excuse me talking about phase one, but the audio V1 scenarios, are contact search, discovery, and addition, so adding a contact, authorizing a contact. That's a LinQ account to MSA and vice versa relationship, okay? As you know, on the Skype side, you have to merge a LinQ a MSA account with a Skype account, and that's how you set up a federated relationship. We will talk later on how to enable federation for the enterprise, but obviously that is a prerequisite in addition to actually the scenarios to enable scenarios I'm talking about right now. Once you've done the establishment of a relationship, you can do presence flows in both directions. So you can see when your LinQ or your Skype contact is online. And you can also send IMs between each other, okay? Obviously only when you're online. You can also initiate one-to-one audio calls, so obviously no video, and audio in both directions. Note this is one-to-one, as you probably are aware already. There's no multi-party, no conference cases supported. You are able to escalate the IM sessions to an audio call, and you can also put the call on hold and then resume the call in mid-call. So those are the V1 audio use cases that we support today. What does LinQ, the video V2 bring? Well, it does everything phase one does, and in fact, it builds upon the phase one technology and the scenarios for content discovery and relationship establishment. However, what it changes is it allows you to do video calls, right? But the way it does it, it actually changes the entire real-time call setup and the media negotiation. So that part, when V2 hits, is entirely new. The presence, IM, contact discovery, relationship, that's exactly the same technology that's in the field today. And then obviously, with the video, you'll be able to reject the video modality. If someone's trying to call you with video, you don't have to answer with it. You can answer on audio only and not send video, but receive video. And during the call, you'll be able to start video and stop it again, so pause and resume. And then obviously everything else that's supported in phase one today. Okay, so rather than just stand here for an hour and talk to you about it, we'll quickly want to show you what it looks like in action, and then we'll start telling you how that works. Okay, so William, do you want
to? I'll switch you over to your Surface.
Do we have it up? Okay, so you're currently seeing my Surface device over here. What I have up there is you'll see William. He is an external contact. This is my corporate LinQ account. And that is William, who is a contact. We've already established that relationship. I'm not going to go through that entire flow. And what we can show you, though, is the contact card. William, we're not going to keep that up for too long. But as you can see, it's a live account. What I'll do now is I'll add video, which will start a call. We haven't got sound going, by the way, because the idea here was really to show you the video. We haven't piped sound out. So, and now we wait for the call signal. Sometimes it can come a little slow. There we go. The call is answered. So I don't know how many of you in the keynote yesterday. You saw this happening. This is pretty much exactly the same thing. That was a live call. This is also a live call using live systems. What we should see shortly is video coming from William, if the demo gods are with us. Any second now. Should have pre-warned this.
Should have tried this call earlier.
We did. Should we retry it?
Yeah, if you want to.
Sorry, guys. When it doesn't work, you know it's real, right? So we go through that again. I'll search for William in my contact list. I'll find him. I will start a video call. Any second now.
Answer?
You've answered?
I'm on video.
I see audio connected and video is now starting and video is received. Okay? So what I'll do is...
And you'll notice I don't have the webcam pointed at me because, you know...
Well, you can see
early
me for now.
It's early morning in Vegas and I'd rather not be on camera. So we'll...
So what I'll do quickly, though, is I'll pop it out, and you'll notice that when you pop it out, it forces 16 by 9. So this is still in development. This is not ready for prime time, as we did say. So, you know, it does now force 16 by 9. I will go full screen, and you'll see the quality ramp. So we'll talk about how that happens. Do you want to switch, show them your screen?
Yeah, so I'll show it from the Skype side. And that's what it looks like from the Skype side, so you get to see.
The quality monitor says you're not doing well, man.
Oh. Demo Wi-Fi network, I'll blame. So
okay.
We'll leave it at that.
Okay, so there it is. That's working. That's a video call between this Skype client and this link client over here. Okay? Right, so now we can carry on and talk about how it actually works. Okay, so what we're going to dig into is a little bit into the architecture and the topology and how this is deployed. We're going to focus largely, obviously, on the link side, because that's what's important to you guys. But anyway, let's dig into that. So as I said earlier, the V1 audio-only functionality that's in production today, what we've done with V2 is we've actually replaced the entire stack that sets up the real-time call. Right? So that's the signaling layer, that's the media negotiation, and that's bits around the media stack, which William will talk about later. So we've put into place a new Skype cloud, and that's maybe, you know, a nice big broad term, but a whole bunch of new technologies that we'll talk about a bit later in some more detail, which is a gateway that connects basically the Link Online Federation cloud on the Link side with the Skype signaling gateways to be able to negotiate a call end-to-end, right? This uses the Link Federation architecture, and the Federation architecture actually forks to V1 and V2. We're not retiring V1, okay? So V1 will live in conjunction with V2 for some time because we'll have all the deployments, we'll have all the clients that haven't yet got the capabilities needed to power a V2 video call. So yeah. So this is the V1 architecture. I'm gonna come down so I can see the screen a little better. What you have on the left there is the Skype interop gateway representation and then the actual client at the end. This is V1, which is the audio path. You'll notice that everything, both media and signaling, runs through the Federation cloud, okay? So today, the SIP signaling, as well as your voice media packets, will route via the mediation server on the link deployment side. And that'll route straight into, if you're on-prem, to your on-prem deployment, and then route it right down to your client. So that all goes through server media gateways and signaling gateways. V2, you'll notice that the signaling path goes through the Federation cloud, but the media path and some media signaling will go point to point, right? So from both the client to the client.
Is that thing working?
Did I skip a slide?
No.
No? Okay, so all audio video calls will still go through the same Link Federation environment. There's no new deployment there. It's just an enhancement of what's deployed today. So it's known proven technologies. From the link side, SIP and SDP messaging will route through that and actually fork between the V1 and the V2 infrastructures. The V2 infrastructures will hit the new Skype gateway that has been written specifically for this Federation case. The reason we did that was we were able to focus specifically on providing the best Federation on a call setup and a media setup perspective. So it was written specifically to map SIP SDP from Link to the Skype proprietary signaling and media protocols. Link to Skype calls, the Link to Skype calls go, as I said, both to the V1 leg through the current media signaling, call signaling and media path, and forks to the new gateway. Basically, the new gateway is only for V2 calls. Skype to link calls, the V2 client on the Skype side will only send it, it will not send a call path over the V1 infrastructure. It only sends it over the V2 infrastructure. Okay? So we won't duplicate from the Skype to the link side. But V1 clients, so the clients, as you can imagine, Skype is a pretty large consumer network. We're not able to upgrade everyone overnight. So there is an upgrade path where some people will still be running some old Skype clients for some time. So the V1 connectivity would still route over the V1 leg. So we will not be disabling that federation where you have a V1 customer talking to an enterprise. Even if the enterprise has the latest versions of Link that supports V2. Okay, so just to walk through the call flow, the call is initiated with the connection details, in other words, the offer. This is from either direction. When the call is accepted, it returns the answer, which is, if you can understand the offer-answer mechanism, we're basically providing a translation in the middle. Skype is not necessarily an offer-answer model natively, so we obviously do a protocol translation, and we map that to conform to the SIP STP offer-answer model to establish the call. This is all done, however, for the V1 leg through the mediation server, and all is routed through media gateway, so there's no direct media connection between the two stacks, between the two clients. Obviously, if you think about that, that's going to give you some additional latency. It's going to give you some quality issues as you set up the call.
So when you talk mediation server call, you're talking about software that's running in the Federation cloud.
That's correct.
Right.
Yes.
That has nothing to do with the mediation server that's sitting in the on-premise Link deployment.
No. So the Federation cloud's it's the same software but deployed in the Federation cloud. Right. Yes. That's where that routes through for V1 connectivity. For V2. The calls initiated through the Federation cloud, so that's through the APs that are deployed to the Federation cloud, which route the call offer, which is the SIP STP message, through to the via the Federation cloud and the Skype gateway to the Link client through the hops that route through on the Link infrastructure side from online through to on-prem if you're an on-prem customer. This is supported for both on-prem and online, by the way, so it's not only for on-prem customers or only for online customers. It works for both. Once the call setup has been established, the offer is, the STP is extracted. We map that to Skype's protocols, and we provide an offer. If it's a Link to Skype call, Skype to Link, we actually receive proprietary signaling to the gateway, and we translate that and prepare a SIP STP offer, which is sent through to the Link infrastructure and hitting the client. The STP is extracted there, but media is actually negotiated point-to-point. So that's a big difference for phase two, is you'll notice the media path does not route through any servers. So what you can expect there is less latency. Hopefully you'll go through direct connection if you're on the same network, or your edge server, the Stun server if you're not. That does use iStunTurn to negotiate, which William will talk about later. And we're also using some additional codecs to give you a higher quality, which William will also talk about later. So there's a lot of work at the media stack layer. Okay, so what clients can you expect to have this supported in? So on the Link side, obviously the Link Windows Desktop client, 2013. That's going to be an upcoming cumulative update release. We will also support this on the Windows Modern client for Link, and that's also in an upcoming release, imminent. Obviously, when we actually push this to public release. We will support this on all the mobile Link clients, and those will also come hopefully around the same time as the generally publicly available. We're not going to support this via the web app, because this is a one-to-one experience. Web app is a meetings experience, so it's not supported for Federation. And the current Mac client for Link is not going to be supported in the near term. We're thinking about that for a potential future. On the Skype side, as you know, V1 today is only supported on the Skype desktop clients, our classic ones, which is Mac and Windows. They will be obviously supported for V2, and the Windows desktop is currently in internal trials, as we've just shown you. And we will have the Mac desktop, the modern desktop, as well as all the Skype mobile clients will support V1 and V2, hopefully around the time of general release. So that's something we haven't had, and we're quite excited about that. We don't have a web app. Well, we do, but that's not in scope for this particular release. And Mac will be, obviously, on the desktop side supported at the get-go on the Skype side, Mac desktop. Okay, so with that, if you have questions, we will have Q&A later. I know there's probably going to be a bunch of questions around that architecture. We did look at it from a pretty high level at that point in time. But a lot of the improvements that's been done is around the media stack. And this is what I'm going to hand over to William, where there's going to be a lot more detail on that. So thank you, and over to you.
Clicker.
All yours.
Thanks, sir. All right, so as Carl mentioned, we're going to walk through the media improvements that we've added in the V2 release of the Link Skype interop. High points. As was mentioned before, the big change is the direct media connectivity between Link clients and Skype clients. This means that we've done a series of different things that we've done. We've added the Silk codec, has been ported and included in the Link desktop client, and we'll come to the other Link clients as we roll those out. The Silk codec will be used in Link Skype interop calls, so it's not currently changing anywhere else, but the initial rollout of Silk will be for these interop calls between Link and Skype endpoints. We'll continue to use G722 and G711 in there for interoping between clients, for V1 clients who don't have the Silk client in the Silk codec in there. So it'll still remain, 722 will still remain in there. The big addition is, of course, video. So all the video work, the video between Link and Skype will be using the H.264 SVC. And the other piece I'm pretty proud of is the fact that now we've got Skype, this call will be using the same ICE NAT firewall traversal story that we've been using in Link for a long time. And that's how we're able to establish the media connectivity between the Link endpoints and the Skype endpoints in the SOLs. So we'll talk a little bit about the Silk codec. So Silk, we're going to be using the Silk wideband with the target bit rate of 36 kilobits per second, and it will be the default audio codec for these calls. We talked about the integration, and we talked about G722 is running at 64 kilobits per second payload. So we'll still continue to offer that, but all the updated clients will be using the Silk client. When we talk about codec comparisons, some of you may be familiar with the tables that we publish in Link that talk about the codecs and the bit rates and the payload size. So this is going to give you a comparison between the Silk codec and G722 in terms of payload bit rates and then the net size on the wire. You can see that Silk is about not quite half the bit rate of G722, but pretty close. And then you have to layer all the overheads depending upon IP, UDP, SRTP, all the other things that take away a little bit of bandwidth on a per packet basis. The other reason why we like Silk over G722 besides the bandwidth is the improvement in quality. The table at the bottom shows our measurements of the improved listening quality MOS comparing the Silk to the G722. Under ideal network conditions, they're close. Silk is slightly better. But then the difference gets a little better as we start adding random loss and bursty loss. The burst loss is kind of more typical on your Wi-Fi networks. So the fact that the Silk allows us to stay at above a 4.0 under 5% burst loss is pretty impressive usage of this technology. All of these MOS scores are computed using the ITU standard P863, which is kind of the standard way of objectively measuring voice quality for codecs. So we're real happy about the improvement in quality that this means for the Link Skype calls. Another internal change that we made relative to the video or to the audio codecs used in the V2 is the forward error correction model. So you may know that Link supports a forward error correction model called redundancy. It's also called sometimes out-of-band FEC. This is where a redundant version of the payload is sent to protect against packet loss. Link Skype V1 calls did not support any form of FEC end-to-end. So under packet loss conditions, the quality kind of suffers a little bit. So what we've offered is in Link Skype V2, we're going to use an in-band FEC that's part of the Silk codec. And this will help us give a protection against packet loss, but you won't see it using the, if you look at a netmon trace under loss conditions, you won't see that payload 97 because it's sent in-band. So it'll be sent with the same Silk codec, just kind of sent in the in-band bits. More, a little bit more about Silk because we're real proud about it. Some information about the payload types. If you look at a Netmon trace of a Link Skype V2 call, you'll see two new payload types in there, one for wideband Silk, 104, and one for narrowband, 103. We offer the 103 for low bit rate conditions. In the V2, gives us, you know, we can go even lower, but if you're adding video, then the difference in bit rate's not going to be that manageable. But in audio-only calls, it's important. And then the Silk SDK is a royalty-free license that allows partners who need it the ability to decode that codec. Just making that pointing that out there about the Silk codec for folks who may be interested in decoding it in their solution. A little bit about H.264. If you're familiar with Link, you're familiar with H.264 SBC. There's two basic modes, UC config modes for 264. Mode 0, which is kind of a AVC bit stream. And then mode 1, which offers a temporal scalability model that we're using. A little bit about H.264. We could probably spend hours going through H.264 in detail, and I'm sure there's at least one of my Microsoft coworkers in the room who could talk your ear off. So if you have lots of questions, I'll know who to point you to. But in UC config mode 1, it's kind of a traditional video model where you have a iframe, and then each kind of intermediate P frame uses the previous iframe as a reference to generate it. So the P frames are your smaller kind of updates, and your iframe is a full sync point. And you just kind of have this one stream. So this is kind of a very traditional model for doing video. The interesting part is mode 1, where we add a second layer of P frames called, surprisingly layer 1. Which is an enhancement layer. So the idea behind it is that those P frames give you an additional stream or additional layer of video encoding over the base layer that allows you to improve the frame rate. Talk a little bit about NAT firewall traversal. This is going to look familiar if you're familiar with NAT firewall traversal in Link. Because we're using the same technology, the software is actually now embedded in the Skype client. So on this slide, on the bottom, you've got the Link client connecting through a firewall. You've got an edge server sitting in the DMZ connected out to the internet. The big Skype logo is the Skype cloud. And then you've got a Skype client sitting at home behind a firewall. Maybe this is your home router, your home NAT, all that goodness. So in NAT firewall traversal with Stun, ICE, and Turn, there's a set of different candidates that the endpoints offer. They offer a host candidate, which is basically like your local network address, right? This could be, if you're at home or within the enterprise, this is possibly a private, non-routable IP address only within your enterprise. And that's unlikely to have connectivity through your firewall to the across the internet through the home network to the Skype endpoint. But it works great if you're within an enterprise. But in these particular scenarios, it's unlikely that host candidate's gonna work. So then we check, we'll also evaluate a Stun candidate, which is kind of your externally public facing address as seen by the edge server, and communicate that to the Skype client. And we have each endpoint are testing those candidates to see if it works. And then the third one is actually where you allocate an address on the edge relay. So the Link client will allocate a port on the edge relay, advertise that in its SDP, and that's one that will pretty much punch through, will allow full end-to-end connectivity. So this is very similar. ICE is a concept that could go on for another deep dive just on the ICE protocols and the details around here. But the important takeaway is that by offering these sets of candidates and using the existing NAT firewall traversal story that we use for Link allows these Skype endpoints direct connectivity to the Link endpoints. We're going pretty fast. Snooper trace. So we talked a little bit about what the SDP would look like. This is pretty small. I can kind of see it. I squint.
Can you guys see it at all?
No?
There we go.
Hey, PowerPoint, 2013. Get it. So at the top, here's the showing the Silk Codex in the snooper trace. Kind of just what I had mentioned before, that you'll see two entries in the SDP offer from Link or from Skype. You'll see it. And then all those A candidate lines, this is all the different combinations of IP address and ports that we offer to try to get connectivity. And then through some combination of those, we'll establish media end-to-end. And then the RTP mapping at the bottom is the 264 entry. So this is the same entry that you would see in a normal kind of link-to-link call, or at least for Link 2013, with the H.264 line in there. And then the lines underneath that talk about the mode, you can see... You can see the mode one being called out on the 264 line. So the support says that you indicate the support for 0 and 1. Next slide. How to enable or how to ensure that you can federate your enterprise, can federate with Skype. So as Carl mentioned, this is done, the interaction to enable the Link and Skype federation is using the exact same federation technologies and approach that we've been using in Link already. If your enterprise is already configured to connect to Windows Messenger via the PIC or the public instant messaging connectivity system, you'll automatically have Skype federation. So you'll automatically be able to interop between Link and Skype with that configuration. There are settings for both Link Online and on-prem. There's a long TechNet article that gives
hey, William,
you explicit.
I'm yes? getting a call here. Give me a sec.
All right. Getting a call. Let's all see. Who is calling you in the middle of this demo?
I don't know. Can't see your video. Oh, so it's Gleb in the audience calling us from a Link 2013 internal mobile or Windows Phone 8 app to my Skype client over here. You want to stand up and show them?
Stand up, Gleb. Take it.
You can actually turn it, so it'll probably do your rotation as well.
Yeah. So that's kind of a cool.
There we go.
So if you notice, stand up. You got to stand up. These folks can't see you. So this is the Windows Link client on there, and when you rotate the camera, when you rotate the phone, you'll note it takes it a split second, and then the video rotates as well. So this then allows you to make the, this is a Link to Skype call using the Link mobile.
Windows Phone 8 client yep. to a Skype client yep. With V2 video federation. Can you try to switch the cam? That might work as well. Should actually. You should get better quality off the back cam. There we go.
Yep.
Okay, anyway, so to show you that we, you know, mobile progress, we're definitely making that, with the Skype mobile clients also coming.
Cool.
Okay, thank you.
So,
back to you.
Back to me, thank you. So that shows you one of the reasons why you want to enable Link Skype Federation is so that you can take link calls from folks on their mobile phones. There's a TechNet article that outlines step by step, walks through the configuration settings required for enabling the Link Skype Federation. And it's the same steps apply whether or not you're doing Link Skype V1 or V2. The same configuration for enabling the federation applies.
I think that's an important thing to notice. If you're V1 today, you have to do nothing other than when we actually release V2, it'll become automatically available to you. Quick question, how many people do have V1 federation enabled today? Wow.
Wow,
cool.
Excellent.
Very good. One of the things I was going to be interested in
as
we jump is the main use cases for the federation. I don't know what you guys are using it for, but some of the things that we know our customers are using it for are interviews, for example, obviously talking business to consumer. But the video we think would bring a massive amount of personality, personal experience to that. If you think about video conferencing for an interview offsite, or if you're on the road and you need to talk to your family, from the office you want to talk to your family, do you guys have any specifics that you guys particularly use it for? Anyone? Sorry? I didn't hear that.
We use it for business communications and interactions
Okay. 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 And it's really making a difference for you?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, that's good. Good to know. Hopefully we can bring a video to make it even better. Good. Anyone else? Just quickly. I know we've got Q&A coming, but I'm pretty interested to hear what people are using it for.
We're using it for customer service applications.
Okay. I'm sure. Excellent. Okay. Well, we can talk more about that later, obviously. But both of you can get yourselves a nice Skype voucher. Okay, so should we jump to some Q&A then? We've actually gone pretty quickly through the content. I know that there was going to be a lot of discussion around that. So I'm sure a lot of people have a lot of questions. Should we dig into that?
Yep. There's a microphone. Feel free to step up.
Yeah, there's microphones here, if you don't mind.
If you don't mind, it'll just help people who are who may watch the recording, because all these recordings will be available, and they may share your questions. So.
Hello.
Hello.
Can you hear me?
Step a little closer.
Okay. So you mentioned very briefly the Link Gateway. Can you go into more detail on as a requirement for the V2?
Yeah, so the question was, can you go into a little bit more detail about the Link Gateway? So the component, you want to handle it or
shall sure, sure.
Is it the same as the Tamberg that was demonstrated?
No, so we've called it the Link Gateway. This is actually a gateway that, remember I said that V1 functionality was over existing infrastructure. So for V2, we actually decided to rewrite the protocol translation from SIP and SDP to the Skype proprietary signaling protocols from the ground up. And that's what that particular gateway is. It's a new component we've deployed that the Federation Cloud APs send the SIP SDP invite and receives the invites from that gateway. That gateway takes that, extracts it, and converts it into the Skype proprietary protocols, which pushes into the Skype network.
So, shorter answer.
So is it a link component?
No, it's
in the cloud.
Yeah, yes. This is basically, he's referring to this component that sits in that Federation Cloud that is bridging between the Skype signaling and the Link SIP SDP. So that is not a component that you have to deploy on-premise or manage in any way, shape, or form. It's just a gateway product that we've built that we're putting inside that cloud that does this protocol translation.
So it handles the V2 leg.
Right.
Yep. Sure.
So what new policy settings will we have on the server side in the Federation policies? Will we be able to control video independently of public audio for Skype?
Okay, so
if we wanted to switch video on or off for specific user groups or universally?
I don't think that's currently planned, but we should definitely take that down. Central, do you know?
I think the existing policies that you have for video should work from the Link perspective, but from a Skype perspective, there's nothing special.
So if
I could be wrong, but there's no existing policy for video because for Federation?
There's not a separate Federation setting around video, if that's your point.
So could there be one, please?
We'll take that as feedback. The point that Senthil commented on was the Link endpoint still has a separate set of video policies that get applied. But that's separate from a Federation-specific policy that could say, this user can use video internally, but it's not allowed to make Skype video calls, for example, maybe as a scenario.
We for one would like that.
Yep, okay.
Did you have other use cases, or is that pretty much, you just want to be able to do it on a user group level, or?
Yeah, it's a sort of network protection, user protection kind of thing, it's a security policy, I guess.
Sure. Okay, thanks.
I think I've got two. Will link to link calls start using the SILK protocols, or?
So we haven't, excellent question. So that's not something that we've announced, but once the codec gets available, it is something that we're looking at and evaluating, but when and if that happens, it's not something we still have to evaluate.
Okay.
One of the reasons why bringing Link and Skype together was helpful is we want to take the best of both, especially from a media perspective, because that's the part I'm deeply passionate about. And take the best from both and combine them. And SILK is an extremely exciting codec from a pure technology perspective. So, but we haven't announced that. But you can imagine it's something we're looking at.
Okay. The other one I had was, does V1 or V2 plan to support response groups, response group calling, or?
So that's not something we support today, but it is something we will look at in the future. I mean, so if you think about the transition from what we've done with V1 with what we're doing for V2 is really focusing on the media and the video and getting that 100% rock solid, good quality. From there, we'll be expanding out the use cases we support, but it's definitely not within the scope of V2.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Hi. For those of us who haven't deployed Link 2013 yet, what's the backwards compatibility story for Link 2010 clients and infrastructure for V1 or V2, for that matter?
So it will negotiate a call with a V2-capable client. It will obviously not have Silicon Office, so it'll negotiate a G722 call. It will be point-to-point media, though, so you will get the quality gains from that. I don't think video will be negotiated, though, so there will be no video negotiation possible. But yeah, you'll definitely, it'll still work, and it'll give you a better quality voice call.
So one of the deployment blockers I see with the Federation with the, I'll call it the legacy Skype users that don't use a Microsoft account, are there plans to give them a fake domain or something so that we can federate with the entire population? Because right now you're
limited to Skype users who've done the MSA account.
Right, so to tell users, well, get a Skype account, and then they don't log in with the right one. It's right. The user experience is very disjointed.
Yeah.
Sure. There's no specific plan around that. We do have a plan to encourage more and more users to move to the MSA rather than the Skype accounts. So I think that will be the direction that we take rather than providing a intermediary path to that. However, it's definitely a valid concern. We might be able to look into see what that might look like. Would it work, just a quick question back, if a user has merged, but they forget to log in with MSA and they log in with a Skype account, but they're not still able to receive calls, would that mitigate a lot of the problems you might see?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, is it mainly the fact that they just forget to log in with MSA on some of their devices?
Right.
Okay, right. I'll take that as a note. That is something we could potentially look at in the near term. But in the longer term, though, I mean, we'd really want people to use MSA.
Right.
Okay.
Okay, so it's the Microsoft account. So Microsoft used to have Live, Xbox. So Microsoft is now unifying their identity strategy so that everyone has a single Microsoft account. And this is true for Skype users in addition to that. So if you install the Skype Modern app today on our Windows 8 platform, Windows 8.1, when you log in, it'll ask you to merge an existing Skype account with the underlying MSA that you've used to log into Windows 8. If it's a corporate account, then obviously you'll have to provide that. It won't seamlessly log in under the hood, unless you've actually linked your MSA with your corporate account. So MSA is, did you want to add something?
Yeah, so, you know, Skype used to have its own identity system, right? You could be, I don't remember, I was William Looney Media Expert, you know, with my tag on Skype. But with Microsoft account to sign in, now I sign in with my Outlook.com address. So it's basically, you know, it needs to be a Microsoft account that you sign into Skype, into your Skype account, and then that enables the federation between the Link and Skype clouds, if that helps. So if you're already signing into like any of the Microsoft properties, Xbox, you're signing into, you're using a Microsoft account, and any of those other accounts, you can bind that to your Skype ID, and use
it. Anyone with the traditional legacy Skype will not be able to be reached.
Not until they associate that legacy kind of ID with a Microsoft, an MSA, a Microsoft account.
And the reason for that is because the relationship between the Link corporate identity and the Microsoft Skype user is actually at the MSA level, not at the Skype account level, right? So that's kind of why it's a little bit, but it's you know, there's a strategy to align all of that over time.
Thanks for the clarity.
Okay.
That was kind of going by.
Okay, yeah, apologies.
Yep. It's something we've lived with for a while, so sometimes we blow past it. Totally, it makes perfect sense.
Are you guys planning to support super wideband on Silk, so the 24 kilohertz sampling?
I mean, now that we've got Silk codec, it's something we're looking at, but at the moment, it's not maybe high on our priority list. I think there's some of the other scenarios that we want to light up are probably a little bit more important than making that codec switch. But.
Thanks.
Yes. And just facilitating contact discovery, I think, you know, we have to get that. Pay some attention there. So did you want to ask a question? Is there any chance you could jump up to the mic?
Exactly.
And while we wait for you, we can ask this gentleman to go.
Real quick question. I saw that you guys had defined the video video conversation as a peer-to-peer. Mm-hmm. Is there endeavor to do multiple or video conferencing, participants?
So V2 is very narrow in scope in terms that it's a one-to-one, point-to-point experience. So in the scope of V2, no, it's definitely something that we're looking for. We realize it's an incredibly important use case on both sides, right? So small family groups, business groups, you know, how does that, you know, interconnecting across the federation divide? So not in this particular scope, but it is definitely something very, very high in our minds.
Hi, video is great, but are you going to add presentation from Link to Skype?
Right, the content sharing dimension. Yeah, so I think Carl's previous answer on meetings is in that same bucket. It is something high on our priority list. We understand the desire, because if you think about unified communications, it's not just audio video, but content sharing, especially from Link, is a real powerful feature in Link. And
universal communications.
Correct. Sorry, I'm using terminology from 3 days ago, so it hasn't quite clicked in yet. But yes, as part of universal communication, content sharing is a key aspect. It's on our list. As you can see, the approach that we're taking is we want to continue to incrementally roll out value. So we don't want to just wait till we have everything. We want to progressively add value and add features and release it, and let people use it, and then continue to build on it. So I think what you'll see is you'll see us continue to innovate and add these features. The content sharing, the meetings are all, you know, and then some of the additional scenarios or response groups are all high on the list, and then they just kind of roll out when we can. So it's...
I think a lot of the thinking was to focus and get the yep. video, the technology that drives that, super solid, rock solid, high quality. Right, and then we start building. But yeah, it follows on from the multi-party conferencing facilities and use cases, the sharing.
It's kind of exciting to see what you're doing with the Silk protocol, but do you have any plans to actually support other modern, or to be able to negotiate other modern video codecs, such as H.265, VP8, VP9?
Yeah, so there's nothing, we don't have anything to announce at this point. In that area, working in the media services teams, we're always focusing on evaluating and building codec strategies in terms of when do we want to adopt new codecs and look at the whole codec space and make intelligent choices about how and where we use the codecs. But there's nothing we have to announce at this point about those particular codecs, other than we're aware of them, we look at them, and it's part of our just evaluating our strategy. That's all we can say at this point.
Thanks.
Thank you. Second turns.
So when Link does the signaling and mm-hmm. then establish the media, is it going to be strictly from Link to Federation Cloud, H.264 video, and then Silk, or it's going to establish the signal, the media as a Silk?
So the big difference between V1 and V2 is in V2, all the media is negotiated end to end. So there is no media. There's no media that's touching that Federation cloud. It's going straight between the endpoints. It may go through your edge server if it needs the relay for connectivity, but it no longer. All that H.264 video is no longer is not touching the Federation. That would also include the audio pipe, audio path in a V2 client. In V1, only audio, and all that audio touched. Basically went from your Link client into that Federation cloud and then out to the Skype endpoint. We've kind of removed that from the media path, and now it goes straight from Link to Skype directly without touching that Federation from a media path. The signaling is all still routed through that because we keep a centralized control on the signaling path. But it's much like a standard Link call from that perspective. Media is negotiated point to point or between the endpoints.
So when it does point to point, what I'm hearing is it's going to use H.264, not Silk?
Well, Silk is the audio codec.
Right.
H.264 is a video codec.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So Silk will just be for your voice and your video. They'll negotiate. They should negotiate the same path, direct end-to-end path. They won't, but none of that audio or video would touch it.
Okay.
If it's a V2 client, if it's a V1 client, when you're using G722 or G711. Most likely be
G722, I think, for VR.
Yeah, it'd be G722. That audio touches that goes from your Link client to the Federation cloud down to the Skype endpoint.
And so Federation does the transcoding?
There's no transcoding even in the V1 case because 722 supported.
It just goes through, yeah. Okay.
It's a routing thing, not a transcoding thing.
Got it.
So this adds a lot of hops and latency, whereas point to point obviously is a lot quicker.
Got it.
This shortens the path. I mean, it makes some of the cases of. The important thing is it takes hops out, and that improves the quality. So you don't, you know, routing, having to force to the Federation cloud lengthens your network path because the Federation clouds are only in certain locations.
It's probably important to note as well that for V2, end-to-end is fully encrypted, SRTP negotiated, as well as the signaling path, right? Yep. So you have full end-to-end encryption for federation calls.
We should have put that on the slide. That's a really good point. Yes.
Thanks. How did we leave that off?
You mentioned the client updates. Will there be a requirement for a server update as well?
No server update. It's adding an additional fork in the Federation Cloud on the deployment and online.
It's a link client update only, no server.
Yep.
So this is something that would just suddenly start to work.
Specifically for this.
Yeah, specifically for this, it doesn't require it, but typically our CU updates, there may be some other server to client interactions that require those to play well together. And since we're only focusing on the Skype, I don't want you to get a false impression on that.
Sure. No, so thank you. Good clarification. Yep. But then as per the question earlier, there's nothing additional you have to do configuration if you're already configured for V1, unless we think about things like additional policies, right? Which is the question.
Next question.
Yeah, I was kind of wondering about your opinion or perspectives on WebRTC and any future interoperability.
Popular topic. Deep breath, sigh. Let's formulate the response. It's obviously we're aware of WebRTC, and we're evaluating exactly what our interop story in there. I don't think we've got anything to present today. No. Keeping an eye on my boss over here, seeing if he's nodding or smiling or grimacing.
He's running away.
We are aware that there's a general desire for people to do real-time communications out of the browser, and that's something we are evaluating at this point in time. We have nothing to announce, but that's something that we know there's a customer demand for.
Yeah, so it's something we're aware that people want to, we understand the push that some folks have towards WebRTC. We're evaluating it and thinking about, what is our what is our story, how do we want to offer it, but it's not something that we have anything we want to discuss here at this time.
And if you have kept up to date, we have actually participated in the standards forums with our perspective on protocols that are more extensible and more
So I don't know if
powerful.
That mic is working.
I think you just have to try to get in front of it.
So I'll just yell here. we understand there's a general desire to provide real-time communications out of the browser for a variety of reasons, from consumer to business. There's a lot of scenarios that people have talked about. And we have actually participated in the standard forums and presented our perspective on protocols that we believe are better better aligned for both the interoperability of the same systems. You guys deploy Link.
So was everyone able to hear that?
No.
We're working with the standards body.
Do we have a backup one of these?
It is.
You just have to stand right behind it, I think.
This one works over here somewhere.
Hello. Does it work now? Yeah. You want me to repeat the whole thing?
Can you summarize that?
Okay, I will try to summarize, and it's loud enough I can hear myself now. So we understand there is a general desire for customers and clients to actually offer real-time communications out of the browser without a plugin, but we also are aware of other trends, including offering communications out of the mobile applications as well. So we continue to think about how we can do that, but the state of the protocols and the standards today are not mature enough that we can actually implement them in our clients as is. So what we do today is actually work with the standards bodies to provide or work on a protocol that provides both interop. We don't want to lose the scenarios and the support that we have in our current Link products, and the same with some of our competing technologies as well. So you take the interop scenarios in mind, you want to support a set of protocols that are extensible by our partners and are powerful enough. So that's the kind of the offering that we came up with CU RTC Web, if you're familiar with that protocol. But together with our other standards bodies members, we continue to work on a joint proposal that we feel will be mature enough before we kind of put anything into the product, which we will need to support for a long term. Does that answer your question?
Okay, thank you, Santal.
So kind of piggybacking off of that WebRTC question, in order for V2 functionality to be, are there any enhancements development from an app dev perspective, from an enterprise developing applications that want to take advantage of audio and video, or IM, outside of a Link client? Is there anything available today with your SDK, with UCMA, web APIs, that we can do that, or is that planned for the future?
There's nothing going to be in with the V2 timeframe, but that would be something we want to roll out in the future. If you saw the demo yesterday about J-Link, I mean, that's using the Link technologies. I'm actually not quite 100% sure if that'll federate today. Do you know?
Whether the J-Link stuff will federate?
Yeah, it's all the web app related.
I don't think we've worked through all the details on that yet. I don't think there's anything we can announce.
Initially, it'll be on what's shipped in our clients, both from the Link and the Skype side. But obviously, we would be looking to roll that out over the future.
There's no time frame for that?
No, unfortunately, I don't have a time frame.
Okay. Sorry. We'll add it to the list of things that people... it's obviously something we want to have a very solid developer story around this as well, and we will expand that as we go. But right now, it's not something we've got a story for.
And that was specific around federation use cases for SDK, right?
Will Xbox One be a V2 client?
Yes. It's not on my list, but yes. The time frame is unclear, but it will support it.
Yes, I have a question in a longer perspective. Now when we use a phone from different company, we can all communicate. What would happen with Link and Hangout on people's communication from Apple and things like that, FaceTime?
So the question is what's our long-term story around interoping with other communication platforms such as Hangouts, Apple FaceTime?
The protocols that you refer to are the products that you refer to continue to be proprietary. So at this point in time, it is very hard to interop with a proprietary protocol either through reverse engineering or
I agree, but in the long term.
When that happens, I would be happy to take your question.
Isn't it pretty much mandatory now to on Google Docs to move from XMPP to Hangouts? As you sign in, I've heard from a lot of people they're now pushing the mandatory upgrade, which is leaving XMPP completely, right?
As far as I'm aware, yes.
I do not know the details of their protocol, but yes, I think you might be right.
They are pushing Hangouts very hard. So,
very hard. Yes. Harder than Microsoft's forcing Skype numbers.
Okay. Yes, maybe.
Good feedback. We can take note. Do what Google does.
No, I will not take that note. Do what Skype does.
Oh, exactly.
Sorry.
I just got a simple question. When?
Later this year. So it's very hard for me to give you an exact time frame, but it is later this year.
This calendar year? This fiscal
year? So it's not saying we can give you an exact time frame, but we're trying to get out as soon as possible during the summer. So, I mean, that would be a target. But there's no specific time frame we can give you right now. As I said earlier, the main thing is to get it to quality. And we want to make sure that when we do ship it, it doesn't cause a regression in what you have today and provides the quality bar that we've set ourselves.
Because if you remember the demo.
Yeah, we can't have that ship.
Yeah, exactly. That doesn't meet our expectations. So obviously we still have a little bit of work left to do. But it's light years where it was a month ago, and it'll progressively get there. So next question.
So would multi-user IM come earlier than the multi-user video?
I don't have an actual definitive answer, but that is something that we could probably think about. It's not something we've thought about specifically today, but
yeah, because we have some business partner actually using Skype, so even IM is good enough if I can cater multiple parties. Yeah.
Right.
To support multi-party IM, you find value in just doing your customers would find value in just doing multi-point IM, and not necessarily multi-point video. They'd still like, but IM as a separate ask would be okay. That's good. Good feedback. Okay. Any other questions? Wow. Yes. Excellent.
Security.
Security, yes.
So we've got SMTP 25 open to the world unencrypted. Now we're talking about opening up the 3478 and 5061 to the world encrypted. So how do we defend against this as a different platform to attack our enterprise?
So this goes through the standard Link AV Edge. Right, or the edge product, and that's the protection point is that edge server. We already support federation today. If you have concern, the edge is your protection point for both the signaling and the media paths. You can disable it. You can shut it all down. But that is your ingress egress point from within your enterprise, and that is the kind of the heart of that protection. For signaling. The media, I mean, it depends on your firewall. It depends on if you're forcing all your enterprise traffic through the edge. It depends on how you've configured your network connectivity within your enterprise. If you want to protect all of your media path and you want to have tight control, you can lock it down so everything forces through the AV edge that sits inside the edge, and you can lock it down that way using all the existing Link. You can do that today for Link. You do it for Link Federation calls today. It's your choice on how you choose to protect that. You're given the controls, and then it's up to you. Some enterprises may want that, some may not, but that's kind of the edges, the heart of that security, piece of the security story. All right, so since there are no more questions, the one thing I will highlight, my laptop wakes up, is six. So I want to make sure to remind people it is important for us and for future Link conferences that people go in and fill out your speaker your session evaluations. I only have Gurdeep. I didn't get a chance to evaluate Gurdeep's session yet, but it's on my to-do list for later today. But for folks, if you signed up and registered for this, you'll get if you go to the MyLink site, you'll find an entry in there for this presentation. Please evaluate the session. It's valuable feedback for us to make sure that we're delivering you the content that you'd like, as well as helping us tailor sessions in next Link conferences to help meet your needs. So it is a very valuable piece. If you could spend a few minutes today or tomorrow filling that out, that would be greatly appreciated. And with that, I'd like to thank you all for your time and your questions.
Yes, thank you very much.